Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, how are you, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Fistful of Collars, your favorite jiu-jitsu podcast. Certainly my favorite jiu-jitsu podcast.
I'd hope so, dude.
We got a new crew on the table this week, but same old stuff in store for you. We're going to talk about some jiu-jitsu, so hope you guys have some fun out there. On the end, straight from the shores of Santorini.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Right? Chase Smith back again, of course, and then making his podcast debut. We got Ryan Smith out here straight from Miami.
That's right. Good to be here.
As well. Ryan and I just got back yesterday from Miami. We visited Fight Sports Academy with Cyborg and Muhammad and just about anybody was there. It was crazy, right?
Yeah, my old home, man.
That's where you grew up? No, that's where you spent some time.
There, right? Used to train there and started filmmaking career there. Nice. So, but it was incredible to be there. What a trip, huh?
Right. Let's talk about this one a little bit because, like we said, this is Fight Sports. We're just, 2.5 weeks out from
I can't believe it's almost here, man. We've been preparing for this for almost a whole year, it feels like, and now it's on our doorstep, man.
Exactly. Finally. 2 weeks away now from ADCC World Championship. We've been talking about this one for a while. But it was incredible to go to Fight Sports. You've been to Fight Sports before in Miami.
I have, man. And what a vibe. It really, everyone says their team is a family, that they're one team. But I just feel like so included in what they're doing there. They're so welcoming, but also just like kind of terrifying. It's some serious training, man. What it looked like out there so close to the tournament. Were they still going hard?
What do you think, Ryan? Are they still going hard?
They always go hard. So, that's what I'm used to seeing. And, right around the corner from ADCC. The mats are always stacked, but I think especially this year, I mean, what a crew they had down there.
Let's talk about who they had there. Cyborg, of course. Yeah. Muhammad Ali. Patrick Gaugio from GF Team. Mm-hmm. Dorinho on the mats. Tom Halpin, who's in at 66 kilograms. Anna Carolina Vieira, who's in under 60 kilograms, the female division. Wagner Hosha, of course, is there. Baby Monster was there.
Is that a person per every division?
It's a
full quiver. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You got 88, Dorinho and Baby Monster, even though they're different teams. And then you had over 99... Ali and Cyborg, and there you have Patrick Gaugio in under 99. You had Anna Carolina under 60, Wagner in 77, Tom Halpin 66. It was so hard to keep track of all these guys, right? Yeah. What was your favorite part of the trip, man?
Oh man, I mean, definitely the pro training or the sunset training session. I mean,
we packed it, full of stuff.
It was a full 24-hour trip, front to back. They really rolled out the red carpet for us.
Yeah.
What did the training look like? What are they doing? The pro training session, I guess.
Man, at the end of every pro training session, I mean, the mats are just covered with sweat. And it is a who's who.
It's a slip and slide.
Yeah, and they're going hard at each other.
Was it just sparring? Doing some wrestling? What was the structure of it?
I think this is an interesting time because, we are less than 3 weeks out from the competition, so guys maybe are kind of just starting to taper back just a little bit. Nobody wants to get hurt. We've seen a lot of pullouts recently, so I think people are really trying to mitigate that and trying to do less of that. They did say that they've been doing a lot of 10-minute rounds, 20-minute rounds, but I think they're kind of done with that. Mm. They're kind of done with those long rounds, those long pushing for the cardio and stuff. And this time, at least when we were there, they were doing a lot of these shark tank rounds, kind of 2 minutes on, 2 minutes off.
Three guys in a group.
Yeah, three guys in a group kind of rushing into open guard. Mm. One of the ones that we were watching the closest because it was just it was just so hard to take your eyes off of it.
I know what you're about to say.
Yeah, yeah. It was just this group with Gaudio, Ali, and Cyborg. Mm-hmm. Insane, right?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You like the entire time. I mean, they're just going back and forth with each other, and you know, they're neck and neck the entire time, pushing each other, getting ready for ADCC.
Mm. Yeah, that group of monsters right there. I gotta say, I just love the fact that I think it's one of the only camps in the world where you have different teams coming together like that, where they're also going to be competing against one another potentially. I mean, it's just such a welcoming situation and really unique, I think.
Yeah, man. The fight sports, they really do have a great vibe out there. I mean, maybe it's the Miami vibe. You can talk about that. But, you know, it just there is such a great vibe there. And yeah, Cyborg talked about it, you know, opening his doors for just about anybody who wanted to come and train with them, you know. And a couple people took him up on his wish there or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. Any other guys there besides? I mean, there's so many. Anybody else stick out to you that was fun to watch?
Well, I think, you know, Bebe Monster getting invited to ADCC, I mean, it definitely made his day.
Yeah.
So getting out there, celebrating with him, and, you know, he was kind of pulling back a little bit, but, you know, he's going to be making his ADCC debut here soon.
He was jacked about that, man. He was really excited, you know, and he made a point to say that, like, he's not just satisfied with an invite either, you know, like Baby Monster, this is a dream come true, something, you know, it's a dream come true for everybody really, right? But he was not going to squander his opportunity. He'd worked, you know, he got silver in 2015 doing the trials
and this year as well.
It's a double silver medals, just by a razor close margin missed, you know, that gold medal, missed the qualifier. So he finally, you know, got the invite just 2 weeks out, and he's not going to waste the opportunity. That's true.
He's been knocking on that door for a while. In the gym, he's always the guy that's pushing the pace. I mean, there are a lot of big guys there, right? But, you know, over the years, Bebe Monster has always been the guy that, you know, is constantly pushing the other guys to keep going. And, man, I'm just so happy for him that he gets a chance to finally show everybody what he's capable of.
He's a great dark horse for sure.
Got some good wrestling.
Like, really?
Yeah.
We saw that at Kasai, actually. You know, he's a tough guy to move around. You know, Baby Monster's had a really interesting year in a way because he got that silver medal at trials. He's so close. But that put him on Kasai's radar. And so he got added to Kasai, I believe, last minute, and had a great showing there. You know, he didn't win a lot, but he was clearly made himself known as a force, and I think his game will actually transition better to ADCC than Kasai's rules. So, man, he could go from being right there on the edge to, you know, taking out some favorites and making himself a household name. Mm-hmm. That's the beauty of ADCC is that it is your shot. You know, look at Craig Jones. We always point to that example, but that's something that we were there for, where Craig Jones was, oh, yeah, he's a good guy from Australia. He got Leandro Lowe up first. I don't know how that's going to go.
Yep,
to, like, definitely. Oh, shit, Craig Jones is the first match. Like, he's the number one seed now in 88, most likely. So,
ADCC can make you a star, right? You know, no matter who you are, and that's the great thing about it. It's four matches, and if you just go out there and win those four matches, or not even, you know, like you said, Craig didn't even win the whole thing, you know, but he just had a great performance. Eddie Bravo, of course, another guy who just had a great performance, and you know, kind of making their careers off of it. So, just days away now from this history making tournament. Super super jacked about it. Baby Monster should be fun. Wagner, of course, there, you know, doing the Python to just about everybody. So that's always fun to watch, you know.
You've been to a few big camps for this year, Reed. I don't want to make you – I'm not quizzing you, but uh-oh. Were there any, like, similarities between the way they are running the training sessions? Were a lot of the gyms doing long rounds? Did you see a lot of wrestling? I mean, I love to hear the differences, right? Because a lot of these guys are veterans, or at least their coaches are and have been there, and everyone seems to tailor their training towards ATC more than other events. Yeah. It's not just another tournament. The rules are very specific. The time limits are very specific. Anything leap out at you? Anything that you
noticed? Yeah, this is something that that Cyborg even asked me a little bit about, too.
In the truck, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it was hard to put my finger on exactly. I mean, you know, there's definitely a lot of similarities in that you're right that, you know, these ADCC rules are such a big part of winning and losing, you know, and really understanding and knowing the rules. I think that's a big emphasis that John Danaher put on the camp. It seemed like a big emphasis that Cyborg was putting on, you know, is just understanding the rules, you know, understanding what happens if the fight goes out of bounds, or understanding what happens if you pull guard and things like that. You know, like, I think those types of things were definitely big parts of every camp I went to. You know, I think maybe in the past some guys had didn't know the rules and lost, right? But I feel like this time around everybody's going to be pretty well versed because it is a complicated rule set. Not that it's complicated, it's just different. It's just different, right?
And it's not that common. You only see it once every 2 years or the trials.
Yeah, yeah. The only place really you can see these ADCC rules, especially if you get invited or a champion, is at ADCC. So a lot of these guys haven't competed in this rule set since 2 years ago. So, no, I think that was definitely a similarity between all of them. You know, I think everybody's training hard. That's for sure. Everybody is taking this tournament super, super serious, you know, and making sure that they're not only getting the good training in, but getting that good rest time in and getting, you know, the technical aspects in as well. So, I don't know, hard to put my finger on exactly that, but I think those are some things that stuck out to me anyway.
Mm-hmm. On the mat, who are some of your favorite guys to watch?
You know what, man? I was really impressed with this Tom Halpin guy when we were there.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know too much about him. Irish, mm-hmm. Irish grappler at 66. You know, I was watching him roll, and he had a lot of cool,
jiu-jitsu wizard, right?
Yeah, that's what they called him, a wizard, right? Yeah. We need to see him versus Jameel, maybe.
Yeah.
Two wizards.
Nice.
What a crazy matchup.
What would happen when you get two wizards on the mat at the same time?
There's a cool metal song called Wizard Battle that you should listen to.
Yeah,
it answers that question.
You'll have to send it to
me. Two wizards.
Can you hum it?
No, it's a lot of screaming. Too intense for the hum. But
Tom also had some great stuff to say about sports psychology and that type of thing. You know, we kind of get in this loop sometimes of this, you know, just train hard three times a day, just, you know, kind of kill yourself, you know, just beat yourself into the ground, and that's how you get better. And that's certainly a part of it, right? But it was refreshing to hear Tom's perspective, which was a little bit more analytical, and he was a little bit more technical minded, and it was refreshing to hear. I was very impressed with
and his
Tom.
Day-to-day training schedule is a little bit different from a lot of the guys that we saw there. Huh?
A little bit lighter, right?
Yeah, a little bit more, you know, he's pacing himself, wants to get, you know, one good quality session in a day, and he's really taking care of his body, and, you know, he's really focused on that aspect, and I think that comes from his education with, you know, sports science.
Mm-hmm. Talked a little bit about meditation being a big part of this camp as well. Some things I think not everybody's doing, so it was an interesting perspective. He's somebody to watch. I think he's going to have some fun matches at 66.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think the Pojada element, the Pojada training is something that is talked about so much, right? Because no one wants to be seen as weak, even on their own Instagrams. Like, I'm always training hard. I'm training five times a day.
Yeah.
But you got to wonder, I mean, there have been so many pullouts of this event, and there are a lot of injuries.
That's a good point.
You got to wonder, is there a smarter way? Is Tom's way maybe the right balance? It's hard to say. The one thing you can control, I think, more so than perfecting a technique is, like, just hours on the mat. Like, for me, I don't really know when I'm getting better at a technique. I just might notice one day, 6 months later, like, oh, I'm actually finishing guys with this. But I can tell each day, oh, I trained 2 hours today. I trained 3 hours, you know, tomorrow. You can count that more easily. And I think maybe that's what gets stressed. Why do you think guys are so obsessed with, like, training hard? What is that?
What do you think, Ren?
Right. Yeah, I think it's, you know, with ADCC right around the corner, I mean, it's, you know, it's how people build their legacy. And I think that, you know, it's just the desire in everybody to be the best. You know, you can't just sit on the couch because you're constantly thinking about what your competitors are doing. And so I think a lot of these times these guys are focusing on, you know, how can they push it just that much harder in order to get that gold at ADCC.
Yeah, we got to remember, I guess, social media isn't real life exactly either, right? And it's not as cool to post a picture of yourself resting.
Unless you have those boots on. You got to get those compression boots. That's pretty sick.
Yeah. That's true. Those pictures are pretty cool. So maybe it's just that. Maybe it's just that, you know, on the gram, it gets a lot more likes when you're flexing, covered in sweat and and that type of thing. But, you know, hopefully, you know, we've seen jiu-jitsu come such a long way these last, you know, several years or whatever. And I think people are coming around to finding a smarter way to train. You know, we're talking about Tom and the way I see a lot of these Gracie Baja guys training, Gabriel and Edwin and things like that. It seems like they're doing some high level sports stuff there as well. You know, you went out to that Mamba Sports Academy,
right? That's right, out there in LA. And man, what a facility. It is like catering to like professional athletes currently like playing, like when they're in their off season, as well as just like super rich LA people that can afford that kind of training. That, yeah, I want to know what Gabriel's doing right now. Like, yeah, there's some secret high level science shit going on there.
That's right. That's the vibe I got. Right. It's like they're very analytical. They're breaking stuff down.
Like, Kobe Bryant owns that academy. That's why it's called the Mamba Academy.
Gotcha.
At least I believe that's the case. And yeah, just the caliber of person in that building. They're all in the top 1% of athletes. You know, mm-hmm. you have mm-hmm. professional football players, basketball players. That's where they go and hang out and have fun. So. To be able to like be in the same room as that kind of person and to pick their brains and their trainer's brains about what you should be doing, I'm curious how it's going to pay off. You know, Gabriel mm-hmm. definitely looks to be in excellent shape. Same with Edwin, mm-hmm. and maybe that's the next road is technology and science, mm-hmm. but who knows?
Yeah, we haven't seen that type of thing penetrate jiu-jitsu too much, so maybe you can get more and more of these sports academies will incorporate jiu-jitsu into their curriculum or whatever.
Yeah. It makes me wonder, though, the overtraining thing is definitely super common, not just around ADCC, but all year long, because there's not really a season in jiu-jitsu. It's not a new topic per se, but I think it's extra relevant when you have this premier event in September, because usually there's Worlds, and then if you want to try no-gi season, fine, but it's kind of limited to super fights and then maybe no-gi Worlds at the end of the year. But ADCC is like another quarterly event, and there's no time off then, because then you're at no-gi Worlds and then Europeans.
Yeah,
how much are these guys suffering?
The gi season starts mm-hmm. January 1st again, you know, and so it's, and you're right back on the grind.
So to kind of pose a question to you guys, you know, how much is the lack of a season like a burden to these guys? I mean, could there be a smarter way to structure the year? Because right now everyone's just going. I mean, everyone's hustling to make every dollar they can. That's also part of it, is that you don't get paid if you're not competing. So. But I don't know. I feel like that's definitely a huge contributing factor to some injuries and just sort of the ruthless nature of our sport.
Yeah, maybe you will see, you know, in the future a little bit more specialists, right? You know, we see some guys like, you know, Gordon and a lot of the Danaher guys are kind of no-gi specialists and that type of thing. So maybe you will just in the future see more gi specialists, more no-gi specialists, you know, and they don't really cross too much, you know, especially the 10th Planet guys. They don't do any gi, or not usually. So I don't know. Maybe I would think that maybe it means more opportunity is a good thing, right? And I don't know. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure, but maybe just in the future you'll see more and more specialists. That's what I would predict. Any other thoughts, Ryan?
I agree. You know, you got guys like you know, Wagner Osho come out of MMA and then go directly into no-gi, and you know, that's what he wants to do. And you know, I totally agree. I think, you know, we're going to see a lot more specialists moving here in the future.
You know what I like to see? I like to formalize the process a bit more than like kind of fall winter we do no-gi stuff, I guess. Like, mm-hmm. what if there was a calendar where, I don't know, every month there was maybe a major, not the level of Europeans, Pans, and Worlds, but there was a big tournament, let's say a Grand Prix, if you will, or something like that, and they would alternate gi and no gi, and mm-hmm. that way you could just sort of time your schedule a bit more, and if you were a gi specialist, you have a full, you know, 8 weeks to get ready for the next one instead of going every month. I don't know. I think there's a way to play with the calendar. Right now it's very kind of haphazardly put together, I think, mm-hmm. and evolved very organically, rather. Maybe there could be some restructuring. I don't know.
Because I feel like, man, like last year, this time, it was kind of not much going on.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. It was a little bit slow.
Yeah, because he didn't have ADCC, right? So it was like after Worlds, there was this big lull. Now, since this is an ADCC year, after Worlds, you know, everybody just ramped back up, basically, mm-hmm. to ADCC. So I'm sure it is a lot. Cyborg told us that he's going on 2 week vacation.
Yeah.
afterwards. Yeah. And you know, you can see why, right? Yeah. These guys have been training for all year basically, and they're going to get right back to it.
Well, that's the way to do it. You know, you walk off with ADCC gold and you're going to Hawaii, and if you don't, you're going to Hawaii.
You're
anyway,
going to Hawaii.
You
know?
Yeah, for real. Yeah, we got to get back out there to Hawaii. Yeah. Maybe
you got to get back there. No one else is going.
No, I hear Fight to Win's going back to ADCC, right? Okay. I mean, going back to Hawaii. Right, so yeah. I'll have to check that one out again. That was a great time as well.
So some major news broke yesterday.
Ooh, let's talk about it.
The IBJJF announced for the very first time they'll be testing for PEDs at No-Gi Worlds. So that's now their second event of the year, kind of equally 6 months apart, that will have testing. What do you guys think about that?
Right? It's polarizing, right? You know, a lot of guys have a lot of opinions about this thing, mm-hmm. but I don't know. I can't imagine how it would be a bad thing, really. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know exactly all the details. Maybe you can fill us in, Chase, a little bit. But you know, I think they're going to be testing the champions, or.
I believe that's sort of an unofficial policy. I believe that it's written in a way that any athlete could be tested, but it's predominantly been seen to be the black belt adult male world champions and female. So
yeah. I mean, you know, I think I don't know. I feel like it's a good thing to want to clean up the sport, right? And IBJJF is, of course, the leader in these tournaments and these jiu-jitsu competitions. So, you know, hats off to those guys for taking charge and taking the lead and testing at Worlds, mm-hmm. you know, and now rolling this out even further and testing at Nogi Worlds. You know, I know some people out there think that we shouldn't test at all and just let them, you know, let people have exciting jiu-jitsu matches. But, you know, I think it's a little bit of a safety thing as well. But I don't know. What do you guys think?
I mean, it's a full spectrum, right? I mean, one perspective is you want to clean up the sport. And then the other one, you want exciting jiu-jitsu matches. So, you know, maybe we're looking at a possibility where it varies tournament to tournament. And, you know, some tournaments, you know, going in that they're going to be tests. And then other ones, you know. True. You know, they're known for
like,
not being
like
tested.
There's two sections of bodybuilding, right? There's like
they have a juicy one.
Yeah, and then the one where they test, and then the one where they don't test.
Yeah. You know? Which one's more popular?
Probably the one where they don't test, right? Because that's where like the bigger, crazy looking dudes are. So
got it. Yeah,
but I don't know.
Interesting.
For sure.
You know what I like to see? I like to see them throw a curveball and like test a purple belt world champion. just put everyone on their toes, man, and like I don't know what's coming next.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that. It's the PDs. Maybe I'm just naive, but I really don't think that it's that big of a problem at the lower belts. Or you know, I don't know. Maybe I feel like it gets a little bit blown out of proportion how big of a problem that a lot of it's perceived to be in the sport. So, but you know, I believe at Worlds we've tested, and you know, we haven't seen too many guys pop over these last few years. So. You know, I think maybe
once a year, though, is basically an IQ test, you could say. You know,
true.
You have a long time to plan that out, and I'm by no means an expert. I know that's deceiving given my build, but not super clued in on the steroid stuff. But yeah, that much is pretty straightforward. But if you make it three times a year, that makes it a little tricky, and you really have to pick and choose, especially now with the qualifying points needed. Like these guys got to compete to even get into Worlds. So,
have you followed? You guys followed what the UFC has done over the last. Couple years, right, or several
more,
years?
More or less. Right, I know they just show up at people's homes at 4 a.m. and collect the sample.
They really have an intense program, don't they? Because basically, like 365 days a year, these guys can show up and test you.
Yeah.
So that's
but it seems
pretty
to be pretty not unreliable, but there have been a lot of false positives and tainted supplements seem to be the play that athletes will use to maybe you know conveniently get out of trouble. You can say, but. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It definitely seems to not be guaranteed by any means that steroids are going away or that someone's actually been busted.
Yeah. Do you like really feel like that their program is like cleaned up their sport? Like, I don't know exactly, but yeah, I guess it's commendable that they're trying it. But you know, with all this picogram stuff, it all feels very high level. A lot of stuff I don't quite understand, and so I'm like, even now I probably am like more confused. Like, what's a positive test and what's a negative test, but I don't know. I still think though. I still do think that it's ultimately a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. And you know, I hope to see it implemented more. You know, I think it makes sense to have it all the majors.
Yeah.
Just kind of get that out of the way. I don't know how Brazilers would even work. Maybe go through WADA instead of USADA. But in any case, great step forward from the IBJJF, and
yep, hats off to
those guys out there informed of any other breaking PED news.
Yep.
And I think it also depends on the athlete. I spoke to Lucas Dupree pretty recently.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he's kind of hinting that, you know, he's coming towards the end of his competition career. And one of the things that, you know, he's very proud of is, you know, not participating in that and accomplished everything that he's accomplished and, you know, having to work even harder to accomplish those things. And so I think it just depends on the athlete. You know, what do you want your legacy to say? And, you know, what kind of style, you know, what's your approach to tournament is.
That's a great point. What do you think? Was Lucas, I don't know, did he have anything negative to say about like the flip side or about the people who support PEDs, or was he?
No, not really. He, you know, I think it was just more pride in the way that he's chosen to approach his competition career. Mm-hmm. And you know, he kind of hinted that he didn't know which athletes were and were not, but he kind of had an idea which ones were. And to be able to get victories and to take titles over those guys was something that he's very proud of.
Do you think it tarnishes the legacy of some of these guys who have popped in the past or something like that? Do you think that it kind of ruins their legacy? Or
possibly, but I think maybe one of the biggest things is internally for those guys, that at the end of the day, you know, they know that they've gone into tournaments, you know, being juicy, and you know, maybe some of them don't have issues with that, but maybe some of them do. Maybe mm-hmm. it, you know, kind of, you know, taints those accomplishments for them.
Eats away at him deep down.
Maybe.
Deep down.
Maybe.
Maybe not. Maybe he's having a great time.
Yeah.
Maybe they're just jacked and like having a great time.
Any case, very interesting times in the sport. It's great to see professionalism making more and more inroads here.
Yeah.
But let's switch it up a little bit. So
yeah.
Let's switch it up. I want to talk to you guys. We have two of the foremost, you know, filmmakers in jiu-jitsu in the room. One of them being me. No, I'm just kidding.
Nice.
And I want to know what you guys go into a shoot with. Like, what comes to mind right now is the Marcelo Garcia walk and talk. So for the viewers out there who haven't seen it, you know, Reed got an amazing 2-hour-long interview with Marcelo where it just talks about the scope of his life, ADCC, really great stuff. If you haven't seen it, you can watch it now on the site. But how do you prepare for like a monumental endeavor like that? You know you're going to get Marcelo, or at least you hope you are, and this is your shot. You know, how do you game plan, and what are you bringing with you that day? What are you walking up with in your pocket?
Yeah, man. Sometimes these shoots are a whirlwind. You know, especially flying out to New York or flying out to Miami. Ryan can tell you, right? We pack those days, and we're going from the gym, and then jumping in the car and running, doing another interview, and running out to another training session. You know, so it can get a little hectic, and you just got to try to make the most of the day and everything like that. But definitely with Marcelo, going into Marcelo, you know, I just wanted to make sure that I was an expert on Marcelo and his career and things like that. So I just didn't want to be stumped on anything, or I didn't want to be uninformed on anything. Of course, to some extent I was, because you know he's telling me stories that nobody had ever heard, or he's telling me things that I wasn't familiar with. But that's mostly what I try to do. I don't really like write a lot of questions or anything like that. I'll write some questions that I want to hit on, but to me, like, I feel like the most important thing when I do some of these interviews is to like just listen to what they're talking about. And I feel like if I get too set in on like my 10 questions or something like that, then I don't like really engage and listen to actually what he's like saying to me. So I try to just keep a loose outline, but I just try to make sure that I'm very current and up to date on his story, his athletic career, you know, his accomplishments, that type of thing. You gotta be a little bit spontaneous, right? Just kind of let it go where it goes, and let it have its own thing, and let the conversation kind of steer where it steers. I like a little bit more organic flow. But you know, a lot of different ways to do those types of things. How about you, Ryan? You got any pointers or anything like that?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, you just got to show up and got to get to know them as people first, right?
True.
Get
true.
To,
That's
you know,
important.
It's like getting to know anybody. You got to be able to empathize with their perspective on jiu-jitsu, and we all have our own, and none of them are wrong. And you know, I think one of the biggest things that's helped me is trying to get them to go back to the beginning, you know, and that's something that, you know, you and I both share. You know, you were asking those guys, like, you know, what was it like your first ADCC title, you know, the first time that you did that, or, you know, even before that, you know, what got you into jiu-jitsu? Just really trying to get, you know, a background all the way from the beginning, you know, who these guys are as off the mat. I think that's really important, is to get, you know, yes, they're a competitor, yes, they've accomplished, like, so much in the sport, but, you know, getting to know them as a person. I think that's when you get some of the most emotional responses, and some of the best interviews I've ever had come from those emotional moments.
I totally agree. I think that's important. Sorry, Jason.
No, go ahead.
To to have a rapport with the subject or with the people that you're documenting and things like that. You know, it's you know, it's a two-way street for sure. You know, they're helping you out, and hopefully you're helping them out as well in some way. But I think that's definitely important to have a rapport before you know, you go out there and do some filmmaking things, and afterwards and ever as well. You know, the relationship deserves, you know, that the whole time to be, you know, to be, you guys to have this relationship. So
I also think their legacy as a competitor, right? Like, because, you know, not everybody wants the same, to get the same thing out of jiu-jitsu. Some people want to be remembered more for this or more for that. And I think being able to uncover, you know, why do they get up in the morning? Like, why are they working hard? You know, is it because they want to be ADCC absolute champion? Is it because they want to, you know, raise a big competition? Like, whatever their why is, I think really asking those questions that uncover that is a big part of doing what we do.
Got a question for you guys then. And I think,
get it.
Why do you do it?
This Jiu-jitsu? Is
a no. What's our purpose here? I feel like sometimes that's missed out. A lot of people don't realize that we're also trying to build a legacy a little bit too. I think, you know, it's not ours. You know, it's the sports. Like to me, I love seeing these stories told because it's unavailable before, or at least, you know, you had to really dig somewhere to find it. And man, that's what I love seeing come out. These trips and these films that come out. It's just the stories being told. Mm.
I feel like it's like, man, we only get one shot usually, you know, to tell a Renato's story, Roberto's story, or to do these, do an interview with Marcelo or something like that. It's like usually you only get one shot, you know, and it's like you're not going to go back and redo it, or, you know, you're not going to be able to tell this same story, you know. So it's like I always just feel like I have to do it justice because you only get one shot, you know. So that's always my mentality of I don't know if that's a why I do it, but I just, you know, these stories are so important. They really are, you know, and it's a history of the sport that, you know, in some cases hasn't been told before or some things like that. So I always just want people to, or I want myself to, I just want to be able to do these epic stories of triumph and defeat and, you know, these such big, big things. I just want to do it justice, but I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah,
but
that works.
Yeah. But what about you, Chase? You've done a bunch of this stuff too. What do you think?
Oh man, for me, you know, I come at it a little bit different approach. You know, I definitely would not categorize myself as a filmmaker. I'm more of like a beat journalist. You know, I love just like dropping myself in and trying to capture what's happening in front of me as authentically as possible. You know, I think it resonates too with the viewers out there. Like, they want to be in the room too. I think more than anything else, people want to see what the training is like, what these guys are actually like. And sometimes you get that just for some raw footage, you know, just 15 minutes of training, you know. So for me, I love being in the room and just seeing what greatness looks like, what it smells like, you know. That's what I'm always trying to put on film. So
I love this game. We were talking about this earlier, this game of trying to get as like close to the action as possible without getting like your camera kicked, which my camera's gotten kicked multiple times. but that's one of my favorite games to
100%.
Play is try to get as close to the action without like getting trampled and everything like
I've
that.
I've been trampled. Had Bichesha follow me at 2017 World Championships, almost took me out for the rest of the tournament.
But, yeah. Man, the first time I went to Atos to film Andre and those guys, man, it was like, it was kind of one of my first experiences in like an intense, you know, room where these guys are just like going after it, you know. And I was sitting there in the corner against the wall, and Andre like drove this guy double leg, drove him straight into the wall. They fell straight on top of him, and I just froze for a second, and I was like, oh, they're gonna move. No, they weren't gonna move. You know, like they just like kept wrestling on top of me, and I was like, oh, I have to move. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and then I scrambled out. But that you know, happens occasionally.
I think such a big part about, you know, why we do what we do is like jiu-jitsu is such a great sport and it helps so many people, but I think it's not the best spectator sport sometimes, you know, like to show, you know, your mom and dad or a friend that has never experienced jiu-jitsu, they don't really know what they're watching a lot of the time, you know. So, you know, I think a big reason why we do this is to grow the sport and, you know, to try to find like creative ways in order to get people who haven't been exposed to it to try to get them on the mat for the first time. Because ultimately, I mean, yeah, to cover the athletes that sacrifice so much, right? Like most of them go through very tough times financially when they're up and coming. And then, you know, at the very top, I think there's a percentage that do very well. But I think to really to do our best creatively to kind of tell their story and to show that road and to show that transformation process throughout their career, I think that's the best way that we can do our job.
Yeah, that's very true. I feel like that's like unofficially all of our jobs as well, is to like convince every person that we know to try jiu-jitsu. I'm sure it's everybody out there's job, right? It's like once you've gotten bit by the jiu-jitsu bug, it's like your duty to make sure that like every person you know has at least tried jiu-jitsu.
You can't get your blue belt without inviting somebody. Like that's part of the rules.
Yeah.
Ray, there's a guy named Ray at our company. He's our CCO actually, high up in the Flow organization. That's pretty close to getting his blue belt, I'd say. And man, he's dragging everybody in now to the gym. He's got like three new people that have started training with us at our academy.
Yeah, Flow Sports was a wrestling company
at one point,
but it's slowly switching to be a jiu-jitsu company side, now.
Got a couple of wrestlers coming in now, huh? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. CP, one of the main guys on FRL Live, Flow Wrestling's podcast. Yep. Gave him two gis this morning. So. Yeah,
he actually said I like jiu-jitsu a lot better than wrestling.
Oh,
he said that to me. Those are his direct words.
Shots fired.
Yeah. Wrestling is just so hard. It's so hard.
I'm not a fan, especially like, you know, wrestling is kind of informal at our gym. There aren't so many guys, and I'm going to use this excuse. Everyone's way bigger than me, man. I don't like getting tackled by a dude with 30 pounds on me. That hurts.
Yeah, that hurts
a lot.
For sure.
No, I remember Ben Askren throwing shade at the jiu-jitsu classes. Mm-hmm. We talked about that at one point, I remember. But
saying they weren't structured and they weren't tough or just kind of a couple guys laying around.
But I don't know, man. Like a jiu-jitsu class is just so much more, I don't know, it's easier. But it's just more enjoyable, I feel like, than a wrestling class. Because I'm just like, the whole time, like looking at the clock, I'm like, oh my God, I still have another hour of falling down and getting back up.
You mentioned going back a little bit, Ryan, that jiu-jitsu can be kind of hard to watch, especially if you don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It's the game, right? It's every pro show's goal to make jiu-jitsu a sport that's enjoyable to watch. What would you guys do? You know, has anyone gotten right? Is it overtime rules? Does it add a little bit of gamification?
Weapons.
Let's do it. I've seen the Russian team MMA stuff. That's pretty cool. I don't know.
So how do you make jiu-jitsu more exciting?
If you could make your own rule set or change one rule to make jiu-jitsu more exciting, what would it be?
Slams.
Slam. It's already in there. You got fight to win.
Slams.
Fight to win is pretty fun to watch, I would say. For me, I want ring out points. I've watched so many matches where guys will play the boundaries.
Yeah.
And as a way to almost stall but also not get scored on.
Yeah.
Make that an offensive move and put them out of bounds. You get a point. I think we'll see a lot more clashes, you know, head-to-head, you know, momentum in general, as well as getting the match to the ground. Like, if you don't want to worry about being pushed out of bounds or being taken down, you'll go to the ground. And I think the most entertaining part of jiu-jitsu really is, you know, the groundwork, not the wrestling.
And there is a fleeing the mat penalty in most jiu-jitsu rule sets, but this is different than that.
This is actually, you can score. Like, if you see your opponent, you know, kind of playing the boundaries, just push them out of bounds, you get a point, let's say. You see guys not standing there anymore.
On the boundary.
Yeah.
Like a wrestling mat, you know, it's true. It's a good way to force the action when you have to have the action be taking place in this circle, you know. So I do agree that would be a good rule change. How do you make jiu-jitsu more exciting? It's tough. I think you're right that it's you know, unless like you really do it, you don't quite get the full grasp of it. Not that it can't be exciting to the layman or anything like that, because I think, you know, sometimes, you know, some of these fight to win main events and things like that, or some of these Kasai shows, I think if you've never done jiu-jitsu, you can show up and still have a good time. You know, but definitely it's just 10 times more exciting if you really know that the chess match that's playing out, you know, these little small intricate movements or grips and things like that. So maybe, I don't know, maybe it's the presentation. Yeah. We could change a little bit
more
too.
Flames.
More, definitely, definitely more flames. More ravens. Four to five ravens we need at every show.
Release the birds.
I guess going back to
hopefully you guys will never know what that means.
Yeah,
we'll find out.
Why did you guys first step on the mat? Like, what got you into the gym for the first time? Was it like a friend or?
All right, I got a confession to make.
Uh oh,
I was doing karate. You heard it here.
I've never.
I know, what a nerd. But that led me to watching MMA, and I was like, oh, MMA is pretty cool, and I started watching a lot more MMA, and of course Machida was my hero at the time. This is like 2011 2012.
He was like confirming your
yeah,
your
like,
karate bias.
Shit.
Yeah.
I'm doing the right thing here.
Look at the other Machida knocking fools out.
But eventually I realized I was in San Diego, and there was a Team Noguera gym right there, and you know, Noguera brothers, of course, like two of the greatest of all time. And it's like, well, I kind of want to check this out, and had every intention of doing MMA. Yeah. And went in there and was like, well, I know how to strike. Obviously, I'm good there, so I should do some groundwork and start doing jiu-jitsu. I did it all for a little while, but it was just too hard. It's like a random dude with a job, and it's like, man, I just want to do jiu-jitsu, actually. So yeah, stopped doing karate completely, like, almost immediately. Like, I think I did one jiu-jitsu class. It's like, yeah, I'm not going back to that.
You're like, oh, okay.
And I just stuck with it. Had a blast, and then I ended up here. It's crazy. So that was my story in a nutshell.
It's crazy. What about you, Reed?
Yeah, my story's probably a lot similar. MMA, you know, Joe Rogan probably, that type of thing. You know, I think eventually...
How many guys has Joe Rogan gotten into jiu-jitsu,
it's
man?
True. It's
gotta be in the thousands.
Yeah, it really is true. Definitely. But yeah, just watching MMA, you know, learning more about that and hearing Joe probably talk about the benefits and hearing maybe some others. I mean, I think the really thing that really got me like hooked on jiu-jitsu was the Kumite. Was seeing... Keenan and Gary and Victor Silverio and AJ and all those guys. When I watched that on YouTube, mm-hmm. that was definitely mm-hmm. the thing that like really drew me in and like, you know, had a story behind it. I was like, who is this crazy skinny American dude who's just like whooping up everybody else out there? That and I think the Kumite is another legendary video that I probably convinced a lot of people to do jiu-jitsu as well. Yeah. But what about you, Ren?
Yeah, similar story. I saw Forrest Griffin, a documentary that was made on him. And Forrest is like a little bit different than most of the MMA fighters out there, right? He's a little bit more relatable. And so decided to go in and try MMA and went into a class and thought I'd be doing more striking. And then all of a sudden it was like a jiu-jitsu class. And so, yeah, just kind of went along with jiu-jitsu. And the more I did MMA, the more I found myself like going to jiu-jitsu classes and, you know,
not being punched in the face was a little better.
Yeah, you know, it's a good perk. Yeah, for sure.
Very nice.
Crazy how that works out, huh?
Before we forget, we do have a little clip here, right?
Oh, from
Galvao piece. So
that,
we
Caleb.
Just dropped a sweet, like, 10-minute video of Galvao talking about his super fight with Felipe Pena. And, man, it's super cool. But let's
roll this video real quick. This is upcoming.
I don't think so. Felipe is a tough opponent. He's on fire. I know he will come like hot, but I'm doing my best as well to cool him down and get my spot again.
When that man is on a mission, he's a force. 24/7, he's thinking about it.
Man, this guy's an animal.
every time that I roll with him, you know, I have some fear.
Every time that you fight, there's always that, like, you know?
I think he really wants to finish his career in, like, in a good position.
It's kind of like a fulfillment of a journey.
Hey, we're back, I think. Okay. Galvao versus Pena. Let me ask you guys. Obviously, this one is happening September 29th at ADCC. I believe it's like the second to last match. They're going to play this one. Then they're going to do the absolute final. I believe it's how they're going to do it. Galvao Pena, you know, you heard them. There's a little bit of a rivalry there. They're 2-2. Is this the biggest ADCC super fight that they've ever put together?
Man, what a great question. I think so.
Yes. there's so much at stake, right? Like this is Andre's actual retirement. You know, he kind of retired, but this was always looming in the background. and now this is it. And he, of course, it's the rubber match between him and Felipe. Mm-hmm. Will he ride off into the sunset as the greatest no-gi competitor of all time, or will Felipe kind of take that crown, actually? So yeah. I think that's what's at stake here, really, plus some money.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, you know, Andre is accomplished a lot in the sport, you know, and if he beats Felipe, who's the younger, you know, kind of more in his prime athlete, you know, I think that's definitely, you're totally right. That's definitely what's at stake here, is the greatest no-gi grappler of all time. Because, of course, Felipe's beaten Gordon twice. He's beaten Buchecha, you know, he's beaten Rafael Lovato Jr. He's got a lot of feathers in his cap. So, you know, if Andre were to be able to take him out, yeah, that would be pretty big. It'd be pretty big. I think so.
Let's talk predictions. I know we've talked it before, but we're going to talk it every single day until it's ADCC, probably, yeah, amongst ourselves. Mm-hmm. How are you feeling today, Reed? What's the vibe today on the Super Fight?
Man, especially after we just released the Andre video, you know, it's just like, it's man, Andre, he is a force. He's a specimen, you know, and I think that I've said this before, you know, that I feel like there's going to be nobody at ADCC more ready than Galvao. You know, I think he's one of the guys who, I don't know, he probably has the most experience there at the tournament, right? Is there anybody who maybe is there? Shanji's not going to be there.
I think Rustam's on four. Andre's on his fifth. Or no, this will be his sixth ADCC, I think. Because I think in that video he says third triple fight, fifth ADCC.
2009. So, yeah, I think this will be a sixth ADCC. Yeah, you're right. 10 years of ADCC for Andre. 10 years of ADCC for Cyborg as well. So maybe Cyborg has a lot of experience there as well.
Those guys, of course, fought in 2013? Or that no, 15. 2015, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Cyborg won the absolute, beat Buchecha in 2013, graduated the super fight. So, like I said, I really don't think there's going to be anybody more ready than Andre. Just being there, he's so focused on this. It's one match. He knows what Felipe, you know, both guys know what they each other bring to the table. You know, man, prediction though, prediction, huh?
Put you on the spot.
Put me on the spot. You know, I think I'm flipping, flopping. I'm going back and forth. You know, I think we're going to see a lot of wrestling, and yeah, I think it's going to be hard to bet against Andre, but Felipe is the guy to do it. If somebody can.
Yeah, I agree. I'm flipping and flopping every day. I have a different opinion about this. But
I'm sorry.
yeah, for me, it's Andre as well. You know, I want to see him, you know, ultimately, like, you know, finish his career out strong. And, I mean, what a great legacy to, you know, all that hard work. And then to take ADCC super fight against Felipe. I mean, what's better than that, right?
Yes. You know, Andre stands a great chance. I think... the wrestling is such a key component to ADCC. I've been doing every single week a little study of the champions from last year, or 2017, I should say, and it's almost unanimously won by wrestling. Whether they've had a great sprawl and like use that to go to the back, or you know, just not been taken down, almost anyone's points are almost 80% from takedowns. There's not a lot of passing going on. It's almost straight to the back if that's what happens, is a takedown and a bat take. So I think Andre's wrestling could be considered superior in a way, plus his stature. He's much shorter than Felipe.
It's true.
So for Felipe to get down under him and double leg him just seems like pretty unrealistic, but you never know, really. But I think age matters, you know, and this is a physical contest that could go a very long time. You know, I don't want to say that's the only factor that will give Felipe an edge here, but I think it's pretty important, and... I think also Felipe's guard could really shine here. You know, maybe he will pull guard, which will be a negative point from the beginning. So ADCC rules are a little weird because as the rounds advance, so do the rules. They change slightly. You're penalized from the get-go in the finals or super fight final for pulling guard, where in other matches you actually have half. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the other rounds, I should say, besides the final, you are allowed to pull in the first half of the match and you will not be penalized. However, in the finals, you are. But maybe Felipe... feels that that's his strongest weapon, where he can maybe sweep or go for a submission, a leg lock, or whatever else. I don't know. I'm curious to see how Felipe approaches the match, because I don't think he'll really want to wrestle that long with Andre, and it could be 40 minutes. So I wonder when the switch goes.
Yeah,
you know, when does he change it up? But for me, I'm going to take Felipe, just so we aren't all unanimously Andre. I think it's just, it's almost impossible to call as well. But I want to see the strategy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing too, is like these guys have fought four times. They've split two and two each time, so it's clear that both of them are capable of beating the other one. You know, this will be the first time that they've met without the gi. You know, I think that'll definitely change change a lot of things, but it'll be curious to see how it all goes down.
Yeah.
On that bombshell then, folks, I think let's wrap it up a little bit early this week. We have a lot going on here ourselves, a lot of video to process. Stay tuned for all the amazing stuff coming from Fight Sports. I think there's even a 20-minute training video already live on the site now with a lot more to come. Those guys are going crazy.
Yeah.
And you'll see his here. I believe next week we'll be back around with more stuff coming. You can watch, of course, we're maybe leaving this out, but do not forget that Nogi Pans goes down this weekend in New York City.
Right.
And there's been some late-minute additions. Keenan Cornelius, Paul Miao, Johnny Grippo.
All guys who are going to be at ADCC trying to get in a last-minute warm-up, it looks like, or, you know, just a little test themselves before the big show. So, you know, you could see some really cool matches there.
Yep, we got Howell and Michael Sears down on the ground there. They're bringing you all the content and coverage. And you can always watch it live and on demand, of course, on flowgrappling.com. Hope you guys have a great weekend, and we'll see you on the next episode of A Fistful of Collars.